Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 174, Patch Up Job. We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap the DC TV in a flash. I'm May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
As always, you can follow us over on Twitter at DC TV Gumption. Email us all your thoughts at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Over on Tumblr, we ask several of your asks when we can. I know there is a lot, and we will get back to you shortly, I promise. We're at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. And of course, you can find all of our podcasts over on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, anywhere else that you listen to podcasts, because there are several places. We do have a Patreon. I'm sure you've heard us talk about this a million times, but just to remind you gently that it is at patreon.com/DCTVGumption, where we talk about additional stuff outside of the Arrowverse and DCTV, including MCU stuff, popular Netflix series like The Witcher. We've done You season three. We did Doom
We have not
Patrol.
done You season three yet.
Or, that's correct. We have not. We've
You
done the new
never did
season.
You season
I
three?
think we did.
It's
No, we did
no, we
You
didn't because
season
it like the scheduling for shows keeps popping up when we get a break, and it's just like insane.
Yeah,
That's
there's
so
a lot
funny to
of
me.
shows and they feel like they keep increasing. So we did You season two. We did Shadow and Bone, which is currently coming up on its second season later on this year, I think. And for DC TV, we did Doom Patrol parts one and part two. Jessica gave us a brief recap of Titans. And
Thank you, Jessica.
we're going to.
Watching shit so you don't have to.
Exactly. And we are going to do You season three soon. So stay tuned for that. Over in the news, we do have The Boys season three premiere is set for June 3rd.
Finally. When
Yep.
is the university one supposed to be coming out, though?
I don't know. I assume it's probably going to come out shortly after season three.
I guess that makes it maybe they like help set it up in season three.
And then, of course, sad news to me since I've been following Snap for a very long time, but potential selling of the CW because Warner Brothers and CBS specifically are not profiting from the CW now that they have HBO Max, and apparently they've never profited off
Paramount.
of
They
it.
never, since it started, like it debuted in 2006 and it hasn't been profitable since 2006. Like
Which, to
you,
be
both of
fair,
y'all broke up, prime black television viewing for a sh network that hasn't profited you just because you wanted more white people on the screen. And this is what you get.
exactly.
So,
But to be
lesson
fair,
not learned.
rant over.
it's really
Not
weird
really, but.
that. Not to be fair, let me rephrase. Technically, the WB should actually look at themselves because even when CW was just the WB and it was separate from the UPN, they were also not very profitable. So that's why it ended and they merged. But we do have that potential. So there's like a broadcaster locally in the US that has, I think, that owns most of the CW channels, like to broadcast. With deals of, I think, cable and all that stuff. So they're allegedly in talks to buy up the CW. We don't really know. And this is primarily because, like, the CW had a good deal with Netflix where previously, before like Batwoman and Superman and Lois, all the shows would end on the CW and then it would go to Netflix, which would boost the CW's ratings. And that actually turned some profit for them because. They just got a boost and more people saw their shows. Now that it's moving to HBO Max, they don't get any of that anymore, and the Netflix deal is not around for the newer shows. So they lose out on some profitability, I'm sure. And I don't know what's gonna happen, but we shall see.
I'm
They're still
curious
developing.
at what will happen, like if they do sell it, what happens to like the Flash is the most profitable Arrowverse show, and they can't really take it over to HBO Max if it's exclusively for Netflix. And if it's going to be exclusively for Netflix, why would the WB care about continuing it on for like more seasons? So I feel like that's, I don't know. The only non-Arrowverse show that I feel like has the stamina as far as like fandom to that needs to be saved would probably be All American because they have like a huge fandom and I think they're always like number one on Netflix whenever the season drops. So I'm curious what will I think they should be saved. I'm not sure if any of the other shows. What do you guys feel about like within the Arrowverse, which shows would be picked up over to HBO Max? Because I think Stargirl is already has they started on HBO Max. I think Superman and Lois basically has an HBO Max budget. So, like, Naomi's just starting out now. So, what does that mean for them? I feel like Legends will just die. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel like Legends,
because they have
on his last legs.
Premium Legends on HBO Max anyway, called Doom Patrol. So.
And so also, Batwoman, isn't Legends of Tomorrow also on Netflix? Like,
yeah.
Like Flash on that old Netflix deal.
Everything up to Batwoman.
I feel like Batwoman should
Batwoman's the first HBO Max show to go that direction. But I don't know. It's really weird because I feel like Legends is on its last legs regardless of whatever happens. And I don't know how long this sale will take, because I know the Disney Paramount one, or sorry, the 20th Century Studios one took like 2 years almost to like finalize everything. So, and then CW is still technically like developing shows. WB is paying for those DC shows anyway.
Yeah. So, and they're, as we will talk about next, they are adding more.
Exactly. So yeah. I feel like there's, if it's for The Flash and maybe, I don't know, one of their other shows, they probably will just shift it over to HBO Max in the future, or just keep it on until, you know, it's over, whenever that will be. So I don't know.
Right. I was going to say, I feel like if that woman is already on HBO Max instead of Netflix, then the only one whose fate really hangs in the balance is The Flash. Because like y'all said, Legends is probably just done. The Flash is the most profitable one. But if it's going to stay on Netflix, then it's really like up to Netflix probably. Like it would be like a Lucifer situation. Is Netflix going to be like, hey, we'll produce it last season?
I feel like they wouldn't. So I feel like Netflix is kind of cheap when it comes to, or they're like selective in a white way when it comes to what shows they want to promote or they want to give seasons upon seasons. Emily and Puri.
Like the way they promote Riverdale, you think it was their show.
Right. Mm. But even before the sale news came out, we were thinking next season was going to be the last season, and if the sale is going to take 2 years, then The Flash is going to be done by the time that closes anyway, and so will Legends probably. So then it won't even matter. The ones that are still viable shows will go to HBO Max. The ones that are not viable will get canceled regardless, and then we'll just move on. The only question is, will those even air on the CW anymore? If someone else is owning the CW now, will they just create their own new CW content? Because I think Nextstar is the thing that they were saying was maybe going to buy it. And Nextstar has like a limited amount of broadcasting stations that they own. So it's like, will they expand their broadcasting stations, or will the CW now suddenly only, air in those stations?
Interesting.
Yeah. I remember reading also that it was primarily CBS that wanted to pull their stakes from
because they haven't produced
any real shows for a while. I think they only have like two overall in the more DC set, CW verse or whatever. So WB definitely has a stake. And if Nextstar takes over for the majority, I feel like WB will still give some money to the CW to continue producing
alms for the shows. Poor.
Yeah. But they won't really be like fully invested or anything like that. Right. Not that they are now, to be honest, but they still develop those shows because they know they have, I think, they know they have the demographic for it.
And they have just like a free reign on CW. You just like pitch out a superhero show. Yeah, sure, we'll take it.
Everyone's going there, which is why David Ramsey will never let go of the Arrowverse, and he himself is going to reprise his role.
It's so funny that he's the most successful Arrow character post-show.
Right? He's just everywhere. He's not even just showing up as Diggle now. He's directing several, Arrowverse shows and just popping up in multiple places. So what he's going to do first is reprise his role as Diggle in Batwoman's ninth episode this season called Meet Your Maker. And then he's going to direct and star in the live action pilot for a show called Justice U, which is being developed at the CW. And it's basically like the synopsis literally reads, after spending years fighting alongside masked heroes, John Diggle embarked on a new mission to recruit 5 young metahumans to live undercover as freshmen at a prestigious university. There he will oversee their education and train them to become the heroes of tomorrow.
I'm just glad it's not a high school show.
Like, yeah, same.
This is the university. Progress.
What are our thoughts on that? And how do we feel, like, who do we think is going to be the 5 metahumans he recruits?
Well, first of all, I'm just glad they're dropping the whole Green Arrow thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not Green Arrow, but Green Lantern. So thank the Lord for that. I feel like you can't be a lantern and a college professor at the same time. So I like this direction. I also like that, I don't know, it could be, I feel like, you know, I want like a Young Justice, like a live action Young Justice. And I feel like this could lean in towards that if we're going for like young, like college age superheroes. I know we have Bart and Nora already on The Flash. And if they're looking to continue the without necessarily continuing The Flash, then you just take their kids and spin it off into like a new show. So I think that could be a thing. I'd want to see like some of like Bumblebee or Power Girl. Or like you know, like Gar or somebody. I feel like there's a lot of cool characters that you could bring in.
Right. What are you, I mean, I agree. Like, I think it's a fun concept. While on the one hand, I'm like, who's gonna be left to be watching these? But that's just thinking about us, you know, people who are getting tired of CW DCverse. But there's always newcomers, and these are obviously like starting with Naomi. It's like obviously targeted at younger viewers anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a good way to continue to bring in new, fresh blood to the, whether it's CW DCverse or just in general DC on television. So yeah, I think, and you know, having David Ramsey there is a good way to like maintain the link with the rest of the Arrowverse. Mm-hmm. I am also glad that we're not going to pursue the Green Lantern thing because it would probably be too expensive for them anyway.
At this point, it's like a fan fiction. It's like a fever dream that happened and they never did anything with it. It just is there.
Right.
But I agree about, you know, Diggle connecting the Arrowverse in general moving forward. And I want to say, obviously, I have no idea, but I want to say they wanted to even bring in Bart specifically so that they could think about spinning him off. Because
I feel like that's good. Yeah.
So far, the way that they marketed him so far, he's coming back to the Flash. And if you're going to keep a part of the Flash going, that is like how you would do it, by either bringing Bart back on his own, making Nora his twin, and making her his age, even though I'd feel terribly for
her. She's too old to sustain a university like level character. I feel like Jordan has the hyperactivity enough to pull off like a college student. Love her, though.
Yeah. And elsewhere in the Arrowverse, we have, well, not the Arrowverse, in the DC world, we have a new Batman trailer, and they've released, I think, Pop Funkos for the characters, including Catwoman, which I'm very excited about.
Yes.
Well, no, Iris West, but we get Catwoman. So, thoughts on the new trailer? Have you seen it?
Yes.
I like it. I think that everything that we get from it looks good. All of the teases and stuff. I feel like they keep dropping, like, here's a new scene from that. I feel like I'm going to see, like, the whole movie in picture stills before we actually get to see it. But I know there are some people that were confused on the Riddler's costume direction. I saw something that's like the de-assification of the Riddler. So overall, I'm just excited to see it. And for now, they are holding steady on the release date. So,
well, you go, team. No, but I am excited. I think it looks good. And I'm very excited to see Catwoman. Just Catwoman is my favorite part of Batman, so I'm prepared to like it regardless, unless they totally screw up Catwoman.
I like that they like some of her lines. They already have like little, like she was telling us like she likes taking strays, and I think it was some clip was dangerous. Like, well, I've got nine of them, honey. Like, who's talking about like her life?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've got nine lives, so I'm cool. So there's a lot in there that makes me like really excited. So.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited for it too. But I had no thoughts because I did not see this new trailer, but I did see all the others, and it looks really good. So hopefully it does deliver on the actual story. And speaking of Batman, Michael Keaton is also set to reprise his role as Batman in the Batgirl film, and on set photos spotted Robin. So
yes,
that is exciting, and I hope it is Dick Grayson Robin, because that's just me.
I think I read a rumor that it's meant to set up a Nightwing show or film, in which case it would be
Dick Grayson.
Dick Grayson, yeah.
Well, yeah, because I feel like that makes sense. I feel like I heard that as well, and it was kind of interesting that because it's a mural, it's not, they haven't actually cast a Robin that we've seen yet, but the write-up with the pictures of the mural is saying that in the original, the two Michael Keaton Batman movies, there was supposed to be a Robin in both of them. And for whatever reason, the Robin role always got cut out or whatever. So this is kind of putting him back into the Keatonverse. So there could be some interesting backstory along with that going into the movie. So there's a lot of cool stuff. It'll be interesting to see who they cast for that, because it looks like the mural looks like, you know, just like the comic book, very vague Robin feature.
Yeah, and I will say, for the first time in a long time, I'm actually excited where DC is going in the movieverse, because it's kind of been okay.
Building a verse instead of just solo movie.
Because they're going to use Flash
inconsistent.
To everything. So, you know, they're we have ideas now. We're going to follow through. So I'm very excited, especially with the characters they're using for the next phase. And in sad news, this is not even DC related, but Jason Momoa.
He's hired by DC.
Yes, that's true. Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet announced their divorce after 5 years of marriage and 12 years together. And I'm everyone's very sad about it. They're just that couple, you know?
And it was who's going to get Lenny in the divorce? I don't know.
Once more proof that marriage is the cure for love. I mean, because you could stay together for 7 years and then you get married and you get divorced in less time than you were together before the marriage.
So, I don't know, there is something there, Tazi. but moving on into our main segment, which after this very long news section, I hope you are excited for, because Jessica will take us away to talk about Naomi, Legends, and Batwoman. So take it away, Jess.
Yes. So side A is Naomi, called Asking the Right Questions. This is the series premiere of Naomi, and the synopsis is as follows. Naomi McDuffie is living her best life as a top student skateboarder. I added certified it girl, because she is, and Superman stan, when a stunt in the middle of her hometown of Port Oswego turns her world upside down. Literally, she passes out and misses the whole damn thing. And while Naomi's doting parents, Greg and Jennifer McDuffie, are concerned with her daughter's strange new fainting spells, but not her curfew or the amount of people in love with her, the teen's closest friends, Annabelle, Nathan, Lourdes, and Anthony, who are all three, have huge crushes on her, and Jacob, join Naomi in a Scooby-Doo gang to help uncover who or what is behind the unexpected event that has this small military town buzzing. A bit of sleuthing leads Naomi and her friends to discover that the owners of two local businesses, Dee and Zumbadu, seem to know a lot more about the incident than everyone else. Soon, Naomi realizes that the mysterious event is just the beginning of a thrilling journey that will change her life and challenge her to question everything she knew to be true. Amanda Marsalis directed the episode, written by Ava DuVernay and Jill Blankenship. What sparked joy?
Well, I like the concept of superheroes not existing in Naomi's world, that Superman is in fact a comic book that her dad, that she read in order to feel less alienated when her dad was stationed in Japan or whatever, and that she feels connected to Superman because he was adopted and she's adopted, because it gives a fresh vibe to this world. First off, it immediately sets us up as in a different universe. Mm-hmm. Than the rest of the Arrowverse. And it also makes the stakes feel higher. Because, like, when a new show starts and it's like, well, I guess now I must become the superhero of my hometown and I will look up how Supergirl did it or how The Flash did it or how Arrow did it or whatever. You know, like, the stakes get progressively less high when you could technically just call up Superman to see if you can get some help. So here it's like, not only is she a teenager who's first, like, you know, getting her footing, that's the word. I was like, her feeting can't be right. Getting her footing in life, but also now she has a whole new, you know, concept opened up to her of the possibility of people with powers and her being one of them in this world. I like that. I also love that she is bisexual already, openly so, and that everyone's in love with her and that she's like, just like you said, a certified it girl, which is great because a lot of, you know, we often start with, I'm so awkward and I'm so shy, I'm so introverted, which is fine. I love that too. But we already have that. We have that many times over in this universe or multiverse of superheroes. So it's nice to have a different kind of superhero. Also excited just to look at more of her blog and see her investigate, like, maybe her what was once a Superman like fandom blog now becoming an investigative blogging experiment.
Little junior Central City Citizen right there.
Exactly. So that's really fun. I love Lourdes already. I like their little interaction, little text me combo was super cute. Also, you know, the fact that she has chemistry with at least two of her three love interests. I am funny, we'll see about you. But the but, you know, if they go for polyamory, I'm also not going to be mad. That might be interesting, too. Also, I think that the military base is a good setting in that, first, it adds tension to the mystery of the supposed Superman sighting, what it means, what people want from the area, and why she is there now. And also, I'm sure, the possibility of her dad having to go somewhere else or her, you know, making a choice to leave or stay or whatever will become relevant later on. So yeah, and finally, I do love Naomi's bond with her parents, but I especially like her mom, that her mom was like super cool. Yay, that's all. But good so far. I think it looks really nice. I'm intrigued to know more. Most the kid characters are all likable, so yay.
Yeah, it was a solid pilot, I thought. It was like, it had the fun vibe, it had the like the energy. I love Casey's portrayal of Naomi. I thought she did a really great job in setting her up and kind of giving her a lived-in feel. I just love that she has like a very supportive group of friends in general, and even they are just always there for her. They're not weirded out by the fact that, you know, she's questioning these people and they're breaking into like a car lot and all these other things. They're just on board, and it feels fabulous. And I also just, this is might be like a really weird thing, but I really like the fact that this episode was very exposition free in general. Like, there were explanations of things, but the mystery, that we didn't get the answers right away. And we also didn't get an info dump about everything that's happening with Naomi and all these things that you typically find in other like Arrowverse shows. You know, there's not some science-y person trying to explain everything to you in this phenomenon. So it was really refreshing in that sense, because it did feel like she was the one actively trying to find the answers, and she was going after people or information on her own without getting everything in one go. And that was really nice, because then it leaves like the final scene where she's like, who am I? Very like a good ending to set up the intriguing parts of her mystery and to keep audiences like hooked, because I know I was like, who are you? Because I you know, I don't know that much about Naomi, and she's, you know, the comic series is technically very new, so a lot of people probably don't know about her either. So it's very nice and refreshing to see that in this show. I also liked her relationship with her parents in general. Not everything, but like just the fact that they seem very loving towards her, and that she's not one of those like emo adopted kids who's like, I hate you, you're not my real mom, or something weird like that. It was very like, I'm adopted, I was chosen. It was very nice, and, you know, I'm always a big fan of found family arcs in general, and I think this one was really good. And even using that connection to explain like why she's just so very into Superman, why she runs the number three site in the world for him, and how even like the shock of a fictional character in her world coming to life, like seeing him flying above her and being completely like shocked about it, and all that stuff was really well done. I think just in general, I really like the vibe of the show, and I actually do look forward to like what's going to come next, because I feel like overall they set it up really well, the characters and their relationships. Could use a little bit of work, but like you sense that there's a camaraderie between these people, at least, you know, to pave the way towards something like much more dramatic later on.
Yeah, I was live tweeting, and I just thought it was very fun, and I really got into the mystery like you did, because I don't know Naomi's comic backstory, so I'm like, is she Superman? Like, she was adopted, her parents died in a crash far, far away. You know, she has blurry eyesight with the glasses. Superman used glasses as a civilian. You know, it's like, I've connected two dots. I know I haven't connected anything at all, but like, I have connected them. Like, I'm getting the vision. So like the whole mystery, and they kept ramping it up of like, you're not asking the right questions. Like, what is the question? And tell me, I want to know. So it was very fun to kind of discover along with Naomi that, you know, there's something happening to her. Who are these people really? What is it? And all that kind of stuff. And I also agree with you guys that it's refreshing that, you know, she is a happy kid. Like, she is, seems to be like extrovert. She has a lot of friends. She's popular. She's smart. So you don't have to be choose between popularity and smart. You can be both and have a lot of friends and be a nice person and, you know, all this kind of stuff, especially as like a Black girl. It's a very like nice, positive representation of a girl that has a lot of different sides, because she's not really stereotyped in any kind of one thing. So the fact that she's able to have all these friends, have love interests, have, you know, a nerdy fan side, like she's, you know, also a nerd, she skateboards, you know, all these different kind of facets to her personality. I thought it was really cool. It's also nice that there, it does feel more normal. There's no super genius with 5 degrees behind the computer. Hold on. There's like no super genius with 5 degrees behind a computer, like, you know, telling you everything that's going on and explaining and stuff, you know, so that felt fresh. I just, you know, the fact that she has, it's very funny because we just did The Love Boat, and you're talking about how, you know, setting up a show, and there's usually, we have your OTP set up in the first episode, and there's like foundation there and all that kind of stuff. But she has 3 love interests, and they're all introduced back to back to back in the same pilot episode. And so I don't know where it's going. I feel like Nathan has the strongest vibe just because he has history out there already. Mm. So I'm like, tell me more. But then also, I just feel like it's a choose your own adventure game. Like, whoever you want, because I don't know where they're going to go with any of these relationships. So that's kind of interesting to see. Her parents are so corny, but it's cute that they seem to have like a loving relationship, and it's a good relationship with the parents. Her friends have like a solid Scooby Squad vibe to them. Annabelle is such a real one. Like, she does not question anything. Like, girl, you think you're crazy? All right, let's go. You know, like, she did not hesitate or try to make Naomi doubt her decisions, which I thought was another good thing. Like, the adults are a different story, but at least with her peers, there's no one that is trying to make her think that she's crazy, or that, you know, making her doubt herself or her decisions or anything like that. So I feel like that's a nice, I feel like she's very protected in that sense. What else? I think it's interesting that in this universe, people feel like Superman is kind of like a myth. He's like Santa Claus almost. And that, you know, some people think he's real, some people don't, and trying to like figure it out. I like how Naomi just doesn't kind of believe it. She's very investigative. Like, she's very like matter of fact. And it does kind of remind me of Iris when she started her blog on the blur, and then how that evolved into something more that led her to journalism, just because everyone was coming to her blog about, you know, because that's the only place they could get information about it. I do think it's super realistic that Brazil and Philippines are up there, number one, number two fan sites. but I do like that when she I feel like it had to have sucked to be the biggest Superman stan and just completely miss the entire fight because you, like, blacked out. But I do like that she was went on her own little investigation, so she's not, like, blindly believing things, but she's very scientific in the way that she goes about it. So I feel like when we are, she's learning about herself and we're learning about her powers and what she can do, I feel like that'll be a cool kind of thing. Not like she can just do it, but I feel like she will help us go through the steps. We'll experiment with her and her powers. So I feel like that'll be pretty cool. And then also just like that, the comparisons with Superman and Kal-El, it makes a lot of sense why he's her favorite superhero. Makes sense why they debuted this behind Superman Lois. So all that kind of stuff. I'm definitely inching to like uncover the secret of her backstory. So I feel like that it was a good, pretty good setup for continuing the show. But all pilots are not perfect, and there are probably some things that did not spark joy. Tell me what they are.
So first off, while I did like her investigative nature and the mystery surrounding what really happened with this Superman sighting, I thought that like Zimbardo and Z-D were both like immediately super creepy, and like we didn't really get any time to settle into the town, at least in terms of the adults, to be like, oh, hey, it's just my friendly neighborhood tattoo man. Oh, now he's being creepy. It was just like, look at that creepy tattoo man continuing to be creepy. So that part, I guess it might have been hard with just one episode for the pilot, but somehow if we could have worked that in a little bit more. Speaking of adults, I am clearly just a hater of adults because I was just like, Barry Watson, you are not Luke Wilson. And you will never be.
I didn't believe it took me for like the whole episode. I was like, he looks very familiar to me, and I could not place him. I was like, oh my god, that's very awesome.
Yeah, he looks so different. I don't know. He does. Like, you know, maybe
I still don't know. It's just
Matt Camden from Seventh Heaven, but yeah.
Yeah, he's from Seventh Heaven. Also,
oh,
see,
right? You wouldn't recognize him. He was also Serena Vanderwoodson's last shitty love interest in A Gossip Girl before she went back to her shittiest of love interests, Dan Humphrey. But anyway, so I don't know what happened that he looks so different, but you know, that's fine. That looking however he looks is fine, but he's never been, you know, as an actor, he doesn't have the charismatic effervescence of the TV dad that I would want him to have. He was fine though. I just, you know, just have to point that out. It's not Luke Wilson. I'd just like to, you know, duplicate Luke Wilson and have him also be Naomi's dad, but that's okay. I know we cannot. Aside from that, my only, not even major, but like my only critique would be that I just felt like, while I love that everyone loves Naomi, everyone was just like so like easy breezy about relationships and conversations. Like, they were like very like brainy, super mature children of the future. Like they're like, yes, our relationship ended, Nathan, but like that doesn't change how I feel about you. And oh yeah, you're right that I don't really like Anthony, but it's only because I can sense that you like him. But that doesn't make me mad at you because we are mature. And then I was like, what is happening? This is so strange. And then even like as Jessica alluded to before, her parents are like, Lourdes has a crush on you. But like eventually you have to make a choice. Naomi, polyamory is not acceptable, I guess. It's episode one, but like you better make up your mind. And I was like, okay, what's happening? And then I would have expected once they were all like in a little unit investigating together, that there would have been more friction between Anthony and Nathan since they apparently don't like each other. But I would not have known they didn't like each other if not for the scene where Nathan was like, I don't like Anthony because he is my rival. So I was like, okay. Which now reminds me, I totally forgot to mention best friend in my likes. She was so great. I love her. But also, you know, again, her being like, of course I believe you. That makes total sense. Everything you say is correct. And I'm on board with you. Again, everyone's very super like, we root for you, which is great, but sometimes interpersonal conflict is okay. So that's all.
I feel like there should have been at least one of them, well, not Nathan, because they obviously had history together, but I feel like either Anthony or Lourdes could have been like a secret crush. Like, why does mom know that Lourdes had the crush on you?
Right.
Like, yeah. Why couldn't, you know?
Yeah. And if that's like common knowledge, it is weird that like the conversation no that she had. Yeah, exactly. The conversation they had, the text messages were super cute, was then weird in retrospect when then we learned that like this is already known information. Like I thought that would have been like the start. Because even the best friend looked at it like, oh, I see. This is a new thing that is happening. Whereas then later they're like, just kidding. It happened. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mentioned earlier that I like that it wasn't exposition heavy, but this is where this is the instance where they were giving us, you know, info dumps about who likes who and, you know, all this love interest gossip. But I'm like, I would have just been okay if, you know, we found out she dated Nathan and it was clear, like it was more clear with body language that maybe she had a crush on Anthony or. Like Lourdes, like her mom didn't have to say anything because I saw Lourdes's vibe. You know, she was just clearly eyeing her for too long.
It's so, I guess it's for like all the people that are like, oh, they're just friends. Like she has a crush on her.
So I could have used like a little bit less of that. And I do agree about like the relationships in general, but especially maybe like her parents, because everything does seem too hunky dory type. But I also will forgive it a little bit just because I know that her finding out more about her origins will cause conflict between everybody. So I will be gentle. But also it could have, like, used a little bit more just to, I don't know, make things deeper for, like, the audience in terms of, like, who Naomi is going to rely on or, you know, be talking to in her time of need and all this other stuff to just further establish the relationships. And also, like, because I didn't know who Zimbabwe was, I could have used less of the, he's obviously the bad guy. Because that was just stamped onto every scene he was in. He just walks in, it's like, yes, I'm wreck you today. I'm just like, I don't know. The actor was great, but like also it was just a lot.
It was like over the top, like,
yeah,
in walks bad person. Like they read the script and was like, yes, bad person walk, you know.
Exactly. So yeah, those are just like little things overall, but you know, just to not make it so obvious that these things are happening when they're clearly happening, you know.
Yeah, she's like, let me stare at you creepily in my trench coat that waves mysteriously in the wind. Yeah, I feel like that was like the weakest part. Like, all the adults are super sus. And, you know, as corny cute as her parents are, they're also corny sus. Like, you know, their relationship is everything feels like a little bit too good to be true. Like, hey, champ, what time did you get in from that completely unsupervised high school party last night? Midnight? Cool. You know, I hope you had fun. And like they're discussing like her love life, like she's the bachelorette, like who can best to you today, who's gonna get the rose, you know. And then like it was so like when she blacks out and then like the next day she's like, sweetheart, like I know you just unexplainably lost consciousness like randomly the other day, but here, drive a car. You know, so I just, it feels like, you know, the more that the episode went on, the creep factor kind of went up. And then I'm thinking like, okay, we know that she's probably connected to whatever UFO crash site thing happened on her adoption day that D, this other sus adult, randomly knows. And then you think about, oh, her parents are military and they're in a military town. Is she there because they are like watching her or guarding her? Like it becomes like a very sus situation about why her parents are who they are and it being in the military and what they might know. And because they're obviously, he's like, oh yeah, you have some random eye disease and wearing glasses slows down your eye disease. And like, come on, really? So I'm sussed out by them. I agree that Zimbadu just feels very too on the nose. He's so on the nose, I feel like he cannot be on the nose. And I feel like, you know, it's probably accurate that he's a bad guy, but I feel like he's such a bad guy that he shouldn't be a bad guy. Like, he's not a bad guy. Like, it's complicated. And there's some kind of gray area there. So it's just, like, confusing me. I feel like D is super unhelpful. He's just, like, not offering a lot. He's like, you're not asking the right questions. Like, you're not giving me any hints, sir. Like, what's going on? So hopefully he becomes a better mentor in future episodes and just doesn't think that flashing wings is like obviously saying anything, because you're not saying anything. Like, I need more. So we talked about it before with the love relationship dynamics. It's fun that she has so many, but it's also, I feel like I could have used a little bit more subtlety in some of the dynamics, just to get, because you don't have any like tension or longing when you already know who likes who. So we'll see.
And I want to add to that about, and I feel like this always happens with women in particular, you know, if it was like maybe a man in this situation, we would clearly have him longing for somebody. But I feel like when it's a woman, there's always people longing for her. And that's great. It's fine. But she can long for someone too. So I feel like that would make her a more active participant in her own love interests, you know?
That's true. Because then having Naomi being the one pursued also makes her feelings on it less important to people, because mm-hmm. they're going to pick a favorite. Right. And then that person's feelings are going to be what matter to them instead of the reverse.
Right. I'm trying to see, do we have any Naomi? Oh, Suara has some Naomi feedback.
Then I will read it. Let's see. Suara says, Naomi had a solid premiere. I love Casey in the title role. She's so curious and vivacious and makes a great heroine. I don't know exactly what the answer to the mystery is, but I believe it has something to do with the multiverse based on her comics history. The parallels they made between her and Superman were great and really compelling. Will she meet Superman or other DC heroes? I don't think this is necessarily set in the Arrowverse, at least not yet, but I guess we'll see. I find it rather funny that this is taking place in the PNW, but they're shooting in Atlanta. This is where filming in Vancouver actually makes the most sense, but still, I love the cinematography. I really liked Ava's script as well. Though it had some of the typical CW cheesiness, it really fit here, and it still felt grounded while still being esoteric in the best way possible. Can't wait to see what the real deal is with Dee and Zumbato and Naomi herself. I will say that Jill Blankenship, who is the showrunner of the show, did say that never say never when it comes to crossovers in season 2. But for now, her and Ava are firmly like, this is Naomi's world. We're going to establish.
Right, that's what Black Lightning said too. Mm-hmm, so exactly. Yeah.
It makes sense for the first season to keep it contained.
And, Jill was one of the writers and I think a co-producer on Arrow. So she has Arrowverse ties. Mm.
Okay. I also want to complain that if Zumbato and Dee are like suspicious already, but also like, why did it take you 17 years to like be suspicious? I'm like, why did it take so long? And why did it take so long for Dee to be like, there's something different about you? Like, you know, you had 17 years. She's been here the whole time.
I guess it has to be that whatever created the thing caused.
Is now coming back.
Right. Or, yeah, like, it caused her to awaken, right? That's what I have to imagine.
But like, is she dangerous? Like, are they like, oh, my God, you might explode. I wish I had more time. Or, I feel like it's going into predictions, so we can, like, continue along. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you knew she was here the whole time, why did it take you until whatever this thing did to reach
out? Maybe that's where the it's complicated comes in. Maybe Zumbato isn't all that bad, but maybe her thing being awakened is what makes him be like, oh, no, we got to shut this down because the legends told me that. And I did not mean the legends of tomorrow. I meant the legends of my people, like whatever they are.
Curiouser and curiouser. Well, moving in to moving right along to side B, where we had the Legends of Tomorrow.
Wait, I have a prediction.
Oh, you have?
For the first time ever.
Sorry. Go, May.
You know, the Superman sighting in Naomi, obviously that was not Tyler Hoechlin's Superman, so it's not Arrowverse Superman that we know. So obviously he's a multiverse Superman that I think hails from her world, which is why he knows Dee. And also, like, based on the timeline at least, I don't know if they're going to change it later, but her adoption date or like when she landed on Earth or whatever was 2004.
Right.
I don't say when this show is necessarily set, and I
just think it's like 2021, like present day, right?
But then it wouldn't track with her age. So if it was 2 years ago, which was like around Crisis on Infinite Earths, would explain how Superman ended up on her planet, basically. And so there you go.
I like it. I like it.
Okay, now moving over to side B, we have the Legends and Batwoman, the better guy slash White Tulips. On Legends of Tomorrow, quote unquote, I have to do like air quotes, that's air quotes, Sarah starts to realize her team is making questionable choices when it comes to the timeline. These claim to be the real Legends, and they are chasing the android Legends that have been messing up timeline, and they have to fix the timeline and also get rid of them. But some things don't, because Sarah is one of only two Legends that has more than two brain cells working. She is starting to realize that some of these fixes that they've been taxed to do don't make a lot of sense, or people that are supposed to be dead don't stay dead. So wheels start turning in her mind. She's trying to figure out who is behind everything, and Sarah discovers some harsh truths. We have Nate, who is like, was his name like Brother Steel or something like that? It's something, he's got inflated muscles. You have Gary the alien that it eats humans all the time. And all of, you know, Spencer Spooner and Behrad are uber competitive. And then you have Zari, who is expert hacker, and also Astra, who just looks really good in a red wig. And you have Dr. Sharp. So as Sarah is trying to not only manage her team, but also figure out why things don't make sense to her when she is shot on a mission, she goes under the knife by Dr. Sharp, and she discovers that they were the androids all along. And that leads to new decisions to try to make things right, and things can turn on their head when Gideon gains the upper hand and recruits Zari, promises to upgrade her, and all the Legends take that upgrade, and Sarah is forcibly rebooted at the end of the episode. David Geddes directed the episode. It was written by Phil Klemmer and Marcelina Campos Mayhorn. What sparked joy?
Very fun. I like the conceit of the episode. It's always fun when you break things up and get to see something from another perspective. So not only to meet the robo-legends, but to also have them believe that they are the real legends was a really fun twist. And also kind of like, you know, a bittersweet or sad, because you're like, oh, you guys think you're doing the right thing, but you're actually monsters. That's so sad. and I really enjoyed how we got to see Sarah, Robo Sarah, slowly like unpeel the layers of her reality, like realize that something was going on, starting from Astra and Zari being as good as new or someone new or whatever, thanks to Ava. And so from there, I thought that like obviously Sarah has always been our leader and she's grown a lot over the course of this of many seasons, but I felt like this episode, getting to see her like a whole new version of Sarah, highlighted her leadership skills and like the reasons why she is the leader, because she's definitely like taken a step back in recent times as the cast has expanded or as we've had to introduce new characters and give them backstories, and also her story is just kind of plateaued, so it makes sense that we haven't gotten to see as much of Katie Lutz as Sarah really steering the ship. And this time it's kind of like felt like taking us back to the early days of Legends or whatever, when she was more of a lone wolf. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. Also enjoyed the resetting of the sexual tension between her and Ava.
Yes.
Because you can still feel, you feel it, even though it's definitely not happening here, but you know, it's still there. So that was fun. Also, even though like, they're all androids, so like it doesn't really matter what happens to them. And as we can see, they are literally can be replaced. But still, like the tension felt very appropriate. And I was at times like waiting to see what would happen. Like, what is Ava gonna do to Sarah? Will Sarah remember? Will she be able to overcome the programming? Will Zari be able to like beat Gideon in a hacking game or whatever? I liked all of that. And then at the end, I even, you know, liked that the twist was then that Gideon, or evil Gideon, mean Gideon, whatever, negative Gideon, offers Zari, like, a better brain.
Gideon reverse.
Reverse Gideon offers Zari, like, a CPU upgrade, and that's what gets her to, like, turn back. Oh, man, the pain. Also, I love the RoboSpooner and RoboBehrad, like, constantly, like, trying to one-up each other. And the, like, constant need to, like, avenge people. Like, I'm going to avenge you. No, I'm going to avenge you. I'm avenging you. Right? Exactly. That was a lot of fun. And Robo Nate was probably the most fun I've had with Nate in a while. Especially when he's like, wait, so I've been programmed to be, like, a brainless hunk? I don't know what he said. But, and then also, like, so that means that we're all made of steel. Like, he's not the only one. Also, I really love the John Cena, like, comparison.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Thank you for the reminder to watch Peacemaker. I will do it.
Which drops today.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. But, yeah, overall, a lot of fun. Kind of like a nice way to, like, ease us back into the season, you know, like a good opening after a... after a month or two break, however long it's been. So yeah, I liked it. A+. Well, it wasn't A+, but you know, whatever. I liked it. We'll talk about what I don't like later.
Yeah, I agree. It was a lot of fun. I feel like I haven't laughed out loud at a Legends episode in a while. And this one was just full of like great one-liners, especially like Nate's like, I'm made of steel and I'm always hard.
Oh God. I love that.
And everyone was just being so extra and ridiculous, and especially like Behrad and Spooner, just like you said, trying to one up each other constantly. And it was a fun dynamic because I don't really think that Spooner and Behrad have interacted too much over the course of, you know, Spooner's time on the show. So that was really fun to see. And I think that this new team dynamic definitely felt, you know, different from our Legends. And I love that even like the intro was like Sarah quotes Nate quotes
air quotes.
It was just, you know, so it was just so funny, and I was very entertained throughout the entire hour. And I like that even they had a mission, and their mission was to just like take down the Legends. And it's like that whole story of like you thinking you're just like the good guy, which I guess really parallels Peacemaker, because like
he thinks he's doing,
and like he thinks he's like doing a good job, he's trying to be a hero, he's trying to save people through different means, but he's like the good guy. And the Legends really did think that they were the good guy, and I like that the slow burn towards realizing that, oh, maybe we're not the good guys, maybe we're the bad
guys. This is the bad place.
And just seeing even like Sarah using her like little cues, like the way that she would just like, you know, with all the sexual tension, look at Ava like suspicious, like there's something going on here, but also being shocked that it was actually Gideon who was the, you know, big bad, not Ava, and Ava was just as programmed as they were. So all of that really came together really well. I even liked her her little bench meetup with her name I can't remember, but you know, and trying to save her, and she's like, let's go to the dead zone. Well, we hate the dead zone. It was all just, you know, such a great time, and I feel like they really incorporated well how we saw the Robo Legends, and we're like, where we saw them the first time trying to kill off our Legends, and how it's like, oh, this is what actually happened, and how they got here, basically. So it was just a fun trip, and I really liked, too, that Zari, you know, because Arzari would never do this, the fact that she betrayed Sarah, she's like, well, I got upgraded to a better brain. Of course I was going to take that option. So it's just really fun to see all the different dynamics and how they played out. And also, you know, how the Legends in maybe in the future, these Legends could become like our Legends, even though they're not like, quote unquote, real boys and girls, you know?
This episode was so much fun. And, I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I really loved the robot revisionist history about how, you know, those are the fake Legends and we're the real Legends. It adds like a lot of it's interesting too, because I guess we have to think about like when Gideon was programming these and how she took out certain characteristics and enhanced other characteristics to make Legends that she felt would just be full on committed to the timeline and not friendship or whatever, and how that affects them and how that changes them, and how part of that is the conviction that they are the real legends and these guys are the fakes, these guys are the androids, because it could have gone like, we are the androids, so we are superior to you humans that make mistakes all the time. But it went the opposite direction, which I thought was interesting. I like that. I love Astra's hair, like all the looks of the legends. I feel like Nate, maybe Gideon was just like tired of like all of Nate's like emotions. It's just like, no emotions for you. Just like be strong and hit stuff. Maybe like, cause Behrad is like a stoner. So she's like, we don't need stoner Behrad. We need active Behrad. And then you put him in a competition with Spooner, who likes to shoot stuff anyway. And that just kind of like ratchets both of them up. So that's plus plus there. I don't know what her thing is for Astra, other than that Astra should look hot at all times. but Astra looks great.
And she did Zari, look hot. Yeah.
Zari looks great with her little stress ball that she had in her hand at all times. And I like that, you know, again, that Sarah, the like you said, the reset of tension between Sarah and Ava. I'm like, you know, what is this? Is this like suspicious? Like, I don't like you suspicious. Or is this suspicious? Like, I'm pretending not to like you so that we don't have to, you know, kind of suspicious.
That is probably like, you scare me, but I would still love to have sex.
Yeah. Yeah. I am both. What is it? Like, I am both afraid and turning. Yes. Yeah. That's what it felt like. But I liked that the ridiculousness of the legends being in positions to do more and more morally questionable things. Like they get sent to Chernobyl to refix it, and to refix it, you have to kill like a bunch of people. They're like, yeah, kill a bunch of people. And Sarah's like, yeah, we know that it's like the right thing to do because that's what's supposed to happen. But also, you know, this guy is making good points about, you know, if you're killing people to make, how do you equate yourself out to be the good guy? And so it's kind of like really interesting to watch how ridiculous it got for them to be able to justify that they're doing good when doing good involved mass murder. And so I like that it really played on Sarah, and I totally agree with you, Tati, that you get to see Sarah in a different way and why she is a leader, and you know, how her wheels start turning, and you know, she doesn't really have all the answers as to why this is the right thing to do when it just seems like the opposite of the right thing to do. So seeing her thought process and how she went about, you know, getting the truth from Dr. Sharp and like staying awake during like the surgery and all that kind of stuff. I liked that there was that dual mystery of, I was so confused because like when Sarah brought in Zari on her theory and they were talking about it like openly, I'm like, Gideon is everywhere. Like, will you stop talking about it? Like, I was so like nervous for them.
Right.
Like Gideon could just like pop in at any second. And then when Gideon didn't, I'm like, did she download herself into Ava Sharp? Like, is she walking around? Maybe that's why she doesn't know what's going on. So seeing how all of that played out with, you know, the threat of Gideon lurking around every corner and Sarah not knowing that Gideon is lurking around every corner was really, it kept me like invested. And when Sarah like commits to not following Gideon's rules and trying to save that doctor, you know, there's extra suspense there. I just liked all the dynamics of the Robo Legends. And the twist, because when she did decide to do good, I thought it was going to be like a one episode thing with the Robo Legends. Like, oh man, you know, they're really fun. It's nice to get to know them. But now I guess it was only like a one episode kind of thing. Oh man. But then twist at the end, reset Sarah, and we're still good to go with like the Robo Legends. So I'm really excited to see more of them and see like when they actually interact with our legends, how that all is going to go. So I feel like this was a great soft way to get us back into the season and be invested again for both. And the John Cena thing was just like so hilarious. It was so funny. What did not spark joy?
Well, I thought it was already like, it was already a little weird when we were shown like Legends like stopping Chernobyl. And then it's just like double weird for them to go, the Robo Legends to go back and like Destiny restore people to their deaths in Chernobyl, because like there are still people alive now who were in Chernobyl at the time. So it's not like watching like a historical event that you can be distanced from. I feel, I was just like, I don't like that. I feel like if I had
been there. Especially if they're like, let's put on a fake broadcast and bring people back. Yay, yeah, killing people.
Exactly. Like, obviously, like, they're wrong. Like, this, that's yeah. obviously meant to be bad. But I was still like, I don't know. Can't we just, like, go to Pompeii and tell people Vesuvius didn't really explode? Like, so anyway, so that part was just really, like, the main thing that I was like, I don't like that. I don't even know if there was anything else. Like, if it was not that, aside from that, I pretty much liked everything. Obviously I don't like that Sarah gets reprogrammed at the end and then kills the last person who could have like stopped nuclear wars on Earth or whatever it was, but it had to happen for the sake of the narrative. So I can't really be mad at it. I mean, could I say maybe it would have been nice to check in on the actual Legends we were at? I could say that, but I don't really feel that way because I really enjoyed the hour outside of that. So I have nothing else to say to pad my time, aside from I wish it had not been Chernobyl.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely see your point there. I was watching. I was like, oh, we're back again here. But yeah, I don't really think I even have any dislikes in this section. I guess I would have liked to have more time to flesh out like how long these legends have been operating. Like, have they only been alive for a small period of time ever since like our legends landed back in 1925? Like, the timelines are a little wonky there.
I feel like it's like whenever Bishop decided to make, like, whenever she kicked Bishop off and decided to make Robo Legends, which wasn't that long ago in their timeline. So I don't think they've been alive for that long, but they just think they have.
Right, because they just had.
I don't know why Nate thought like those muscles were actually like legit.
Like, those could have, like, they're the biggest part of your body. But yeah, I got nothing else.
If I'm gonna nitpick, I guess I would like to see more of what Astra's skill set was, because she didn't really seem to do my. According to who was it, Sarah or Ava? Dr. Sharp, that her and Zari's talents are best suited off the field.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, like, with Astra now, like, because her gift is, like, magic, and you can't really make a robot do magic, so.
That's probably why, yeah.
Yeah, I see now that's probably why.
And then maybe, although no, I mean, obviously, Zari's talents being off the field because she is, like, a computer that's hacking computers. But you'd think she would think that would get her closer to the truth. But oh well.
Yeah.
Yep. So what does Swar have to say? Because I know he had stuff to say.
Swar does have something to say. And I will get to you, Swar, but momentarily. So I was just briefly checking Twitter. And new Legends photos have dropped for next week's episode. And who is in them? Eobard Thawne, played by Matt Letcher.
The best reverse flash. Superior reverse flash.
Yes, so I'm very excited. I don't know why he's in the episode, but we'll see. As for Swar's thoughts, he says, Legends was hilariously terrifying. The Robo Legends are great, even though they're fundamentally evil by being misguided by evil Gideon. I love that Robo Sarah and Robo Zari were the ones to uncover the truth, very much in the spirit of their original organic selves. It was so heartbreaking that they failed and ended up killing the nuclear physicist.
Was it her? And rendering... Like, wasn't heartbreaking, and he's like, and then killed him because they're for the fifth. Oh yeah, that was sad.
And during the other legends' efforts to save the Chernobyl citizens, sigh, that was actually frustrating, but still somehow compelling for the story. The writing was so good and so witty, and all the Robo Legends were used so well. They're going to be very compelling antagonists going forward, and I can't wait to see where we go next. Yeah, I will say that they're the most fun antagonists we've had in a while. So that's Swara.
We support you, Swara.
So, about predictions, do we have? Because I think like the next episode is just straight up OG Legends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
I don't know if they're going to go back and forth between
Do we
them,
think upgraded Sarah will, you know, is she like one of those people that you like erase her memory, but she'll figure it out. She's like the mouse that figures out the way out of the trap, no matter how many doors you put in her face.
I hope so.
Probably, but I would imagine that the next time we see the Robo Legends will be when they're about to collide with the real Legends. And then I think Sarah will probably be the first one to revert, but it'll probably be through being faced with their counterparts and being like, listen, this is the truth. Follow your heart, not your CPU, which was a great line, by the way.
It was.
Looking forward to that. Finally, moving into our last show is Batwoman. And in this episode, Mary and Alice continue their sisterly bonding at a hotel suite penthouse in Metropolis, racking up an $8,000 bill. Ryan and Luke and Sophie are desperate and willing to do almost anything to stop them from their new luxuriously ghetto Batcave, a.k.a. Renee Montoya's rent-controlled office space, musty underground office space. And they are willing to do anything to get Mary back, even entertaining a dangerous proposition by Renee that she used to get rid of Pamela Isley, which was get a serum to basically dry drown her, like dehydrate her, and to the point of almost death, which sounds awful. And Ryan agrees that it sounds like a horrible thing to do to someone you love. But she gets outvoted by Sophie and Luke, who just want to, you know, I think the thing that Renee said is you can't always have on kid gloves. You have to take off the kid gloves and you have to make hard decisions. So this was, am I misusing Sophie's choice if I say this is like Ryan's Sophie's choice? I feel like it's like appropriate, and that this is a hard decision she has to make of whether she wants to keep, you know, the love of her friend, like loving her and not hating her for doing this to her, and then or saving Mary from herself, whatever. So Ryan is struggling with this decision. She's also struggling to work with Renee Montoya because she is still very salty that Sophie is sleeping with Renee. As the team hunts for the source of Poison Mary's power and potential demise, Renee is get the serum to stop Mary. They have to actually find the original Poison Ivy and where Batman has hidden her like a creepo underneath his floors in the Batcave. And to find, first they don't really know where she is, so they have to go get Batman's journals. And this is how Renee, like, very weirdly learns that Bruce Wayne is Batman, which she is totally caught off guard by. But to get to Bruce's journals, they have to break into the Batcave, which is now under tight lock and key and digital technology security by Marcus, who has completely renovated Wayne Tower and is throwing a party with a very weird card game interview to find his new team since he fired all of the old team at Wayne Tower. So they sneak into this party, which allows Sophie, Renee, and Ryan to sneak into the Batcave to find the journals, and they realize that Pam has been with them all along underneath the ground. They find her. Ryan finally has to make the choice to get the serum out of her. She goes to give the cure to Mary, who has showed up at this party, because Mary is wants some space, and the Bat team won't give her space. So she's like, Alice is like, you know what you can do? You make them hate you, and then they won't want to be around you. So she goes to Marcus to be like, hey, Marcus, let me tell you a secret. And that secret is that Ryan is Batwoman and Luke is Batwing. So Marcus kidnaps Luke at the party. And when Ryan is about to administer a cure to Mary, Marcus comes up with a threat to Luke's life. And Ryan does not hesitate to save Luke. She throws the serum and actually dry drowns Marcus. So Mary escapes. Marcus is incapacitated. And that is where we end. directed the episode, written by Ebony Gilbert and Daphne Miles. Oh, and there's a whole ass backstory with Pam and Renee I completely forgot to tell you about. But we get to see not only what Renee's decision was to stop Pam, but we get some backstory to Pam and Renee's love story and the decisions that Pam made that drove Renee to the decision that she made, was forced to make. And when given a second chance to be with Pam again, she takes it and steals Pam from the Batcave, which she definitely was not supposed to do. And Alice is like, I should have told you so, because I knew that she was a lying liar who lied and that she had Joker's joy kill buzzer all along, and she was never going to let me go until we gave her what she wanted, which was her girlfriend. So all of that happened. Let's talk about it. What sparked joy?
Well, I am so glad we finally got to meet Pamela's Poison Ivy. Poison Pamela. If we're calling Mary's Poison Ivy, Poison Mary. And I thought it was really nice to see a little bit of flashbacks and context for what happened to her and her relationship with Renee and how Renee felt about it, how it's affected her, why she is acting the way she is now because of what went down with Pamela. I also heard the part where they found her, and then I don't remember who was it. Was it Sophie or was it Ryan? Someone said, oh, I hope she has a nice personality.
It was Ryan.
Oh, that was so funny. I lost it. And then, at the end when Renee kisses her and it's like her eyes open, I was like, oh, what is this? First, that's actually gross that you kissed her when she was all desiccated like that, but true love. So I guess that's good. Exactly. True love's kiss. So yeah, I really liked everything having to do with the backstory. And I think it, adds to Renee's layers, right? And Renee is just a complicated woman. She obviously has her own motivations for what she's doing, but I cannot totally fault her. And I understand that she was, between a rock and a hard place. I also really enjoyed Mary and Alice bonding time in the hotel, especially Alice egging Mary on to use her powers on the people, and the fact that Mary didn't think of it first on her own, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like she's still, not a totally bad person at her heart, or not a totally corrupted person, if you will, whatever. Just like when she is complaining that Ryan and Luke won't leave her alone, and Alice is like, so we kill them. And Mary was like, no, we cannot do that. I like their back and forth. And how it's still teetering that line of Mary still wanting the attention or the validation from her friends, from her chosen family, and at the same time having only Alice to sort of give it to her, and Alice being yeah, you're the most important thing to me right now because I'm babysitting you and I haven't killed anyone in a couple days or whatever she was. She
didn't
said
have any delusions or
yeah
whatever.
No delusions. Yeah. So yeah, I really liked all of that was going on. Also that Ryan was so conflicted about how to handle Mary because she still wants to save her, but she also doesn't want Mary mad at her. And she doesn't want to desiccate Mary and leave her rotting in the ground for many moons. Thank you. Everyone should agree with that. I also really enjoyed them going to Marcus's party. First off, their outfits, their code names. The party itself.
Yeah, their backstory.
Yeah, the backstory. The fact that she's going to be French. And also, the game itself, I knew he was going to do something crazy. But then when he, electrocuted that dude, I was still shocked. And the people were shocked, but, still willing to... Or actually, they're still there, but, I loved that, that chick did not want to go up. And Ryan was like, okay, I will take this. Because I would not want to go up there after that happened either. Probably not a good idea. Not the odds that I want to take. Yeah. And then I liked the confrontation with Marcus and Luke and Ryan and Mary, and Ryan choosing to shoot up Marcus instead of Mary. So I am looking forward to seeing where everything goes from here. But overall, it was an engaging hour that has me ready for next week.
Same. The the elevator, the sexual tension-fueled elevator scene was just amazing. I will take it any day. I loved Montoya, Ryan, and Sophie teaming up. First of all, they looked fabulous. Number two.
Yes, they did.
They looked so good.
They looked so good. They were kick-ass. They were just, like, petty, arguing, but they still made a good team. Like, they worked together really well. So I feel very proud of them for being able to do all of that, even though there's, you know, some tension there between specifically, like, Ryan and Renee, because Renee is still, I don't think it's necessarily just because Sophie's sleeping with her, but also, again, because Renee is holding her identity over her and, like, right, forcing her to right, do all these things. So it was just, like, just delicious drama. I loved it. And even, like, Montoya turning out to become such a multidimensional character is very nice and very refreshing, because she has been on the show for a short while, and getting to see how she functions, like, her saltiness over her job and where she's come, and also, like, the backstory in this specific episode tying back with Pamela, what happened, and how she, like, you know, whatever, needled her to be sent to Batman, basically, and how that, like, really hurt her, because, like, I was, like, watching that scene and thinking, Pamela's never going to forgive you, Renee, but also really feeling bad for Renee, because that must have been just a terrible, terrible decision, and I just loved all of the feelings that it brought up for her, because I think that makes her a lot more dynamic. And in general, like, the plan to infiltrate Marcus's party was really good. I love the code names as well. And even, like, what was Ryan's backstory, that she was a worldwide board game owner?
Board game,
or something,
yeah. Board game CEO, like, empire.
Oh, this feels very accurate to what they're doing, too. So this was really fun. And just, like, the
whole, I don't know, Marcus vibe, didn't recognize her, like, immediately. Like, come on.
Sorry. Right.
Yeah, I know. But it was just really,
and her, like, French was so bad. I'm so sorry.
It was so that. Bad. So bad. Bless her, she tried. But just, like, the whole vibe was great. I think it was, like, they were being very proactive, and even seeing, like, Mary being poison Mary, but, like, not retaining some of her characteristics, the fact that she doesn't want her friends to die, she just wants them to, like, look at me.
Look at me, but from afar, please. Yes, look, but do not right, touch that. Do not touch the art.
So everyone was just, like, on their A game this episode, and even, like, Alice and Mary's dynamic was really good. I feel like we're getting a lot more of it, and it's been really interesting, because I think I mentioned this in the Love Boat episode about how Alice always needs to be tethered to someone, and this was very true and confirmed when she's like, because of you, I haven't been seeing delusions. So here we are, because Alice has once again attached herself to someone, but I thought it was really smart of Alice to, you know, use Sophie's credit card to get her to come, like, after her.
I love that. That was so funny. I
was like, wait a second. Alice wouldn't be so dumb just to, like, buy a cheesecake, you know, and alert Sophie that she used her card. So the fact that she also continues to have information that is always useful to the Bat team continues to make her character useful to the show in general, besides, you know, being connected to Kate. So I feel like that was really clever too. And
it was also funny when Alice was talking to Mary about not having any illusions, like, I'm not seeing Sophie in the shower walking, and he's like, no, you actually did that.
she's still so salty over her, like, pull out couch. I was like, oh my god, let that go. But yeah, it was a solid episode. I feel like it really raised the stakes. There was a lot of great interpersonal drama and plot drama, and everyone was just amazing in it. So
yeah, this is a really fun episode. The lesbian love triangle drama was, like, aces. I just like Ryan being so salty about the fact, like, she kept bringing it up repeatedly about, like, Sophie and Renee sleeping together, and I like that Renee kind of gave her salt back too, in the sense that, you know, they both had they wanted to get their, like, their point across. And Renee was like, you can't be just wishy-washy and you can't be all love and rainbows. And, you know, Ryan also feeling like I shouldn't have to hurt the person I love to save the person I love. And so I really was like rooting for Ryan standing in her convictions of surely there must be some other way than doing this like despicable thing. You want to do this to Mary and you want her to, you know, she left because we didn't show her that we cared, and showing her that we care is not like drowning her or of like dehydrating her to the point of almost death. So I like that there is that tension between, but also, yeah, I also like that Renee was like, I know it's not the loving thing to do. You know how hard it was for me to do that with the love of my life. So it was good to get that backstory and context within the episode of her relationship with Pamela. So we could see, it's not just her saying that, you know, I didn't want to do it, but I had to do it. You see the conflict that she's in. So it's understandable, even though you feel bad that it was done to Pamela, you also feel for Renee having to choose that and there being no other choice. You get like why she did what she did. So I thought that that was really good. I love, it felt very fun between everybody, even when like Ryan and Renee are going back and forth, it still had like a fun kind of vibe. And I feel like Sophie was making it kind of fun because she's just trying to like keep it on a professional level and they just kept like snapping at each other. I like when Ryan first brought up about Sophie sleeping with Renee and then Luke was like, you know what, I think I'm gonna walk over here. Like he was trying to like diffuse the awkwardness. The elevator scene where they're like going over their cover stories is really fun because Sophie's like, yeah, I bet my girl's kind of hot, and Luke's like, yeah, she actually is. You know, so it just, it's still, even if they're in like a very stressful, high stakes situation, mm-hmm. of trying to get into this fortified fortress that is known as Wayne Tower and try to break into the Batcave, it was still very kind of like light, a lot of banter to it.
Right.
and I think the whole back and forth triangle with Renee, Ryan, and Sophie, and how good they work together as a team kind of made up for the fact that there wasn't as much Mary in this episode as I thought it was going to be, because I thought it was going to be come back and it's like Mary's like debut into Gotham of being Poison Ivy, and there's less of her and Alice, but it didn't feel like there was less of them because I got so much of this other trio. Like I said, the frat alert was hilarious that Sophie got. I feel like Sophie had so many like funny moments in this episode. I think the three of them looked great kicking ass, very beautiful. I even liked that there was a secondary triangle with Marcus, Mary, and Luke. I love how dumb Marcus is, and Mary's just trying to, like, spell out for him that she's not with Ryan and Luke anymore. And, you know, he's very, like, slow on the uptake, but he's also, like, intrigued by Mary. So I really liked their back and forth. And then, of course, you have, like, Luke, who can't get Mary to talk to him in the party. And he's just like in the corner watching the two of them. So it was all kind of like vibes and triangles and stuff. And then of course you have like the very like intense confrontation between Marcus and Luke. So triangle vibes all over the place, a lot of really good tension. I was surprised at the end when Ryan shoots Marcus with the serum instead. I thought it was just like a battering or something like that, but the fact that she used the serum on him and that was the only serum chance that they had, because now Renee has stolen Pam. But I was like, dang, Marcus lasted a lot shorter than I thought he was going to. So trying to see what happens with him in the future, I think is, you know, something that's going to be very interesting. Yeah, so it was really, I really enjoyed this episode. I had a lot of fun. Oh, and I loved her Ace of Spades earrings, Ryan's earrings, mm-hmm. little detail. Loved it. What did not spark joy?
I don't really have much that didn't spark joy. I agree with pretty much everything that you said. I think I just still feel like there could be more urgency about saving Mary. Like, I feel like the fact that they were willing to use the serum at all on Mary was just weird. I was like, how is that going to be if Pamela's been, I don't even know how many years it's been that Pamela's been just like.
At least 10, because it was, yeah. the flashback yeah. was 10 years ago.
Right. So it's been like a decade of her being desiccated. Like, I don't, how do we even undesiccate her? I don't know. Like, is there an antidote for the serum? And how is that going to, like, whatever. So I just thought it was like weird that they were just like, okay, we're going to do it. Like Ryan was like the only one who was like, no, wait, let's think about this. And everyone else was like, well, you know, seems like the best plan. Like, come on, guys. Come on. But aside from that, I also thought that I'm sure this is not the end of Marcus. Just like this is not going to be the end of Poison Ivy or Renee, etc. But the episode did kind of like end on like this note of like all these avenues of storytelling temporarily shutting down or appearing to shut down, right? Marcus has been serumed and Renee absconded with Pamela, etc. So I was like, where are we going to go next? I guess I thought that we would have a little bit more. Like, I would have liked to see Mary and Marcus team up rather than Mary just kind of like give away her ammunition in terms of Batwoman, which was also, I don't know. I guess I didn't really understand like the decision-making process there.
Yeah, because it was like, she's not the best at being bad.
Yeah, she wanted to, well, first, like she wanted Ryan to hate her or whatever, right? So I guess she was like, I'll reveal the secret. But then she was like, oh no, I guess Ryan cared more about stopping Marcus than about me.
I'm sad.
Yeah. I was like, well, you were the one that made that happen. Like, what is that? So I don't know. I didn't know why that was the choice.
You were like in Doom Patrol, I was like, look at me, don't look at me, look exactly. at me.
Exactly. So that was a little bit like, okay, I guess. So we'll see. I do love the geometric shapes galore that are going on. But again, it's like, aside from Ryan being petty in those scenes, which was fun, and for her to be like, because you blackmailed me. I don't care that you slept with her, but you blackmailed me. That's what I care about. That's the only part. That part's all fun. But then now that Pamela's back in the picture, like, obviously, it was never really a triangle to begin with, right? Like, that's not like Renee has feelings for Sophie and vice versa. So, I don't know. I guess my point is that I would have liked to go further down the line, the avenues that are clearly not going to be going anywhere. Okay, now I'm done.
I mean, I could have used a dance scene between Ryan and Sophie, but I'll let that go.
They had a job to do, May.
I mean, as for the episode itself, I think you make a lot of sense with regards to Mary not making much sense. Because she, and it's interesting too, because I felt like last episode was her turning full on into, you know, Poison Mary, Bad Mary, or whatever. And now she's still showing the sides of her that we know her as Mary. So it was really kind of frustrating that she would immediately try to give the Bat Team secret away and then be mad at Ryan later, only because I was frustrated because it's like, Ryan was trying the hardest to save you, girl. Like, what is wrong with her? I know she did not know this, but it was also from like a story point. It was just hard to watch because Ryan is trying her hardest to save her. She's the only one who's putting up a fight in terms of like, oh, this is going to affect Mary. I don't want her to put her underground.
Yeah, Sophie and Liquid, you know, throwing you under the bus, girl.
Yeah, right. So to have Mary be like, she still chose Marcus over me. I was like, oh my God, really? So that was really frustrating. And also, I know that it seems like they were trying, but they, you know, that with the, sorry, with Mary's dance with Marcus and her being all up in his space was like the prime time to whip out some Hamel Fox, and still it just failed. Spectacularly.
He was like, you know, lurking in the corner, but it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he was trying to like, you know, talk to her. I don't know who he's trying to talk to, but it just like, it would have worked to really up the ante on Hamel Fox, and it did not do that. So I don't know.
They didn't have enough like cutaways of his pained face watching them dance.
Yes, exactly. And they could have, because like Mary's showing up. She's not the Mary you know anymore, supposedly. And that should have also caused you pain. And then her dancing with Marcus should have triggered some jealousy or something. But, you know, just dry over here. I don't know what's happening.
You know what else was kind of dry for me?
Literally and metaphorically?
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, if only we had met her before Mary showed out as Poison Mary, then maybe she would have felt fresher. But she's the older version, and she feels older. So...
You're training her out for the younger, newer model.
I will not really like elaborate. Just that it just felt stale to me. Mm-hmm. And the flashbacks, like I get the story from like Renee and the decision point, but I just felt like their relationship was kind of stale.
Yeah.
And I feel like part of that, just like aesthetically with her costuming and everything like that, it's not as good as Poison Mary. So she's like, you know. But hey, whatever.
Yeah, and I felt like her story was more about Renee's story more than mm-hmm. Poison Ivy herself.
Yeah, you didn't really get a lot, you know, there wasn't enough time to build in her backstory of environmental terrorists for you to really be with her on that journey.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like you were saying, if they had shown a backstory episode for Renee, starting her relationship starting with Pamela to how it became the way that it was before mm-hmm. they introduced Mary as Poison Ivy, that would have been the best way to go about it, because then we would have from the start have sympathy for Renee, know what the deal is with Poison Ivy, and then, you know, and then we go into Mary, because it's not like it really was a mystery, like, oh, who's Poison Ivy? It's like we don't know.
Right.
So
and I feel like it was also the ending when Alice, I thought Alice was smart to get Sophie. And when there's like, she's a liar, like she's a lying liar that lies. I'm like, oh my God, what is this big twist? And the big twist is that she had Joker's bus killer all along. I was like, that didn't really feel like a twist to me. It didn't really feel like Renee was that much of a liar, because they still had to find all the other stuff. So the fact that she already had one didn't really seem to me that she betrayed anybody. So I don't know, that twist kind of fell a little flat, but yeah. And yeah, I do think Mary was being a little ridiculous about, because she clearly saw what happened to Marcus when Ryan stabbed her with what she was going to stab Mary with, and now she's like, why couldn't it have been me?
And another moment to put in Hamp Fox, like Luke was about to die, but Mary was like, okay, that's fine, I guess.
Well, I know Sonia had some thoughts on Batwoman. What did she have to say?
Sonia says, it's been so long since I've given feedback. I wish I still had Patreon, because I'm assuming you've done an episode on No Way Home. We have, or we'll be doing an episode, and I would have loved to give my feedback on it. Anyways, enough about that. I'm so excited to give you my feedback on Batwoman. I really like the flashback scenes with Renee and Pam. I have thought ever since I saw Bridget on Agent Carter, White Collar, and Jane the Virgin that she would make an excellent Poison Ivy, and she did not disappoint. Also, side note that literally Bridget has been a crazy villain in literally every single thing I've seen her in. Talk about typecasting. So funny that Mary brought up that when she needed attention from Ryan and Luke, they didn't care. But now that she wants them to leave her alone, suddenly they care only about her. Pam being all, but these flowers symbolize forgiveness. I'm sorry, I tried to kill you and your partner. Luke, Ryan, and Sophie complaining about needing to be holed up in Renee's office and how bad the internet, asbestos, and the smell is. Luke being all, we should get some air, when Ryan started berating Sophie for sleeping with Renee, like he really does not want to be part of Wildmore drama. Looks like Marcus has Martha's necklace. Let's hope he does not accidentally put it back
in the correct position. Like he just took it. Like, I know that he replaced it with a baseball, but I guess that they're, you know, he probably threw it in the trash. I don't know. Or some kind of like box in the bottom of the basement.
Interesting that Bruce would leave that behind. But anyway. So it does not accidentally put it back in the correct position that opens the back cave, because that would be bad. LMAO at Luke playing a former Olympic athlete, like, sure, buddy. And Sophie is an heir to a witch. Fortune, and Penelope runs a board game empire, and I love Ryan being confused by that. Also, only Luke would say dream job about running a board game empire. That's true. Ryan's mask is a high-tech Batwoman mask, and Sophie's is from the dollar store.
That was funny.
Marcus is electrocuting people if they answer his job interview questions wrong. Like, if people weren't already scared of job interviews, now they are downright terrified. The flashback showing how Renee betrayed Pam, the drama. I knew Pam was in the Batcave. I knew it. Loved Ryan using the
echolocation.
Yes, thank you. I looked at that word and my brain froze. Loved Ryan using the echolocation to find Pam. It's kind of like when Kara and Supergirl or Clark and Smallville would use superheating to zero in on one sound. The sexual tension between Marcus and Mary was palpable, but was anyone else slightly uncomfortable with it? Or was that just my Hamill Fox heart screaming at me? Also smart of Alice to use Sophie's credit card to lure her to the hotel room. And as a side note, where can I get a 3-tier strawberry cheesecake? Because that sounds delicious. Alice walking in on Sophie in the shower, or Alice walking in on Sophie in the shower and thinking it was one of her delusions, and Mary being all that last one was real, and Alice just like, oh, okay. Renee had the Joker's buzzer all along. This was all some elaborate scheme to get Pam back. Can't wait to see what happens now that Pam is back. And I'm excited to see Poison Ivy and Poison Mary team up.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sonia, for your feedback. And Suara has some Batwoman feedback as well.
He does?
Yes. He says he loved this week's Batwoman.
Why was that so surprising?
I skipped over it, I guess, when I was looking at his email. I skipped from Naomi to Legends. I was like, where was the Batwoman?
Just in the middle child. He loved this week's Batwoman. Nicole was fired this episode. I love how morally and emotionally complex we're seeing Mary. She's become such a brilliantly compelling character, no matter what quote-unquote side she's on. Rooting her journey in wanting to be appreciated by her loved ones, oof, I've felt that hard. Marcus's continuing mind games with Brian are both frustrating and super compelling. I love the drama here and how it's all weighing on her. Speaking of which, the continuation of the lingering jealousy of Sophie being with Renee was great, and then the twist that Renee was trying to free Pam all along. So good, and I love the flashbacks and the revelation of Pamela Isley. Batwoman is continuing to fire on all cylinders, and I can't wait for where else season 3 goes.
And also, if you want to hear more about Nicole King and her thoughts on Poison Mary's journey, Suara did an interview with her, which you can see. It's on Nerds of Color, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And yes. It's a video interview.
Go support.
Yay. So any predictions?
May?
No.
No.
I got nothing.
I have one. Because right. Next week, Mary is going to meet her idol, the OG Poison Ivy. So she's going to go meet Pamela. And I feel like since Pamela is just freshly out of the ground and probably very weak, you know, all of her skills have atrophied from being underground for so long and not being in the sunlight. And Mary just has like a lot of fresh Ivy poison. So sure. I feel like, and I don't, because I still don't know how long Mary is going to be able to be Poison Mary, especially now that you have the OG out and about. So right. Part of me feels like Pamela is going to steal through photosynthesis or however she plans on doing it, Mary's powers and strip Mary of being Poison Mary without Brian or anybody having to do anything. Like Mary's going to be saved where she wants to be or not. And that's going to give Pam a power boost. That's what I'm thinking.
I like it.
And also Mary will have to like contend with what she did.
Yeah, she'll have to like grapple back to, well, I guess I'm back. You can love me now. Come on. Okay, so now we have Lady with Gumption nominations for the week. Obviously, Naomi's got to have her own. I don't feel like mm-hmm. that's a debate there. Naomi for Naomi. But what about
for Legends?
Yeah, that seems also another clear-cut choice.
Sarah for Montoya for Batman.
Sorry having the gumption to persuade her at the last minute.
Yes. That's true. And Montoya for Batwoman, I think, is
Montoya, solid. Okay.
I accept.
Okay. So, one of those three strong choices.
Mm-hmm. Out of that, I think we should... I feel like I'm between Naomi and Sarah for sure.
Mm. Interesting.
Were you between Renee and Naomi?
I was between Renee and Sarah, but I
Renee and Sarah.
I want to give it to Renee because she's playing the long game, and it worked.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning towards Renee.
All right, well, I'll accept it.
Tamira was very brave for like breaking.
She was very brave, but she
and Naomi will have several opportunities.
But she failed.
Yes.
Naomi hasn't had any adversity yet. Everybody loves her.
Yeah, that's wants true. To help her. That's true.
Okay, so we're going to give it to Renee. Renee Montoya is our latest comment of the week. Thank you for joining us. You can catch us at the same bat time, same place on Twitter at DCTV Gumption. You can send us your feedback, ladiesofbegumption@gmail.com, or ask on Tumblr at ladiesofbegumption.tumblr.com. You can check out our podcast on the Podomatic site, Google Play. Wow. What was that?
An ad on my phone.
Oh, no.
You can sign up for Patreon for $10 a month and get this episode plus a lot of other feature content. Also, check out The Love Boat because we dropped that as well. So you have tons of stuff to listen to. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.